Okay, I think we'll get started. Thank you all for persevering. It's been a long day, and we look forward to a really engaging panel on open science. This really, given the overall topic of the conference on science, ethics, and responsibility, we recognize a key component of that for science to actualize its role is to rethink the strategy of science and how to make it more equitably accessible. So we will be talking about open science in the context of reflecting on the future of science, but also importantly, ensuring we're building a science system that is responsive for the future we seek to build. So we have an esteemed panel here today representing different organizations, because we know there have been lots of operational and policy and legal frameworks, particularly in recent times around the context of open science. And we have represented on this panel several organizations that have played a key role in that. We will start off with each member of the panel, each panelist briefly introducing themselves over a couple of minutes each, talking about what they see as open science and what open science means to them. We will then show a short 3-minute video that explains so that we're all on the same page on what we mean by open science. And then we will go back to the panelists, and each panelist will first touch on open science policy strategies, so laying the landscape of what several open science policy strategies in place. And then in terms of building science for the future, we will look at presentations on making open science a reality and doing it in a way that is equitable globally. So without further ado, I will, for this initial bit, I will just ask you to start from that end and work backwards. And for the second bit, I will introduce your name to get going. So start with you.
Thank you, Tul. So you just want a short personal introduction in our understanding of open science. My name is Marcos Regis da Silva. I'm Brazilian. I'm also the executive director of a regional intergovernmental organization, meaning I'm an international civil servant, not a scientist, but I work very closely with scientists because my organization is unique in the sense that we sponsor large-scale scientific transdisciplinary projects in the Americas to deal with global change, meaning the projects have to be open science, open data, transdisciplinary in nature, among a minimum of 3 research institutions in 3 different countries, and deal with very complex problems. But it's not science for science's sake. It's science to where we use the findings generated from the results, and present those to decision makers for more effective policy making. So it's a very unique international organization because the decisions it reaches joins the corpus of international law, and the countries have, if you excuse the term, a voluntary obligation to fulfill the decisions that are reached. My understanding of open science is that it's not a stable meaning. It's dynamic. It changes with the evolution of science. It changes with the needs of society. But you can identify a few elements in it. I think transparency, sharing, collaboration, and participation are probably the pillars. And these are supported with things like citizen science, reproducibility, transparency, open data, open access, open peer review, and so on. And we can go into details of each one of these elements, but with collaboration, public participation, open stakeholder involvement, and so on, it brings about the concept of open science. Thank you.
Hello, I'm David Meller, representing the Center for Open Science, based out of the U.S. We're a nonprofit organization, mission-driven to achieve a goal of increasing reproducibility in scientific research via incentivizing transparent research practices. And we achieve this lofty vision of culture change through 3 main strategies. We seek to replicate the results of previously published research in reproducibility projects in psychology and ongoing ones in cancer biology and the social sciences. Lessons learned from those efforts go into our education and our outreach and our advocacy to develop incentive programs to reward the types of science we want to see that focuses on the importance of the research questions and the methodology, the rigor and the transparency of the methodology over the surprisingness or flashiness of the results. And we achieve that with scientific publishers, funders, and institutions by making sure that the concrete, or advocating to make sure that the concrete rewards of getting published, getting funded, and getting hired are based on ideals of transparency and reproducibility, again, over the flashiness of results. And then we build platforms to enable the types of actions we want to see of collaborative research endeavors connected to openly available data, transparent methods through study pre-registration, and quick and unbiased dissemination of research results on by communities that foster preprint servers.
Good evening. My name is Kostas Glinos. I am responsible for the Open Science Unit, which is a unit in the European Commission in Brussels. We make the policy for the European Union regarding open science. The European Commission has the privilege to be a policymaker and at the same time the operator of a research program, the Horizon 2020 right now, in the future will be the Horizon Europe program. So this is a very nice, this is a privilege in the sense that we can develop policy but put it into work through the funding program, try out, and it is a vicious cycle that we can create. We started more than 10 years ago in the area of open science through open access. This is the process that almost everybody has been following, progressively expanding from publications to data, then to fair data, findable, accessible, interoperable, reusable, and then to various aspects of science in society, including citizen science. Maybe we'll discuss about those later on, as well as in all the aspects of careers of researchers, incentives and reward systems, so quite a bit similar to what the previous speaker said. Now, about the definition of open science, if I attempt a very a definition that's as short as possible, it's about sharing. In my mind, it's about sharing everything, everything meaning publications, data, methodologies, results of research, software, everything, as early as possible, and as openly as possible, and sharing not only between scientists, but across disciplines and with society as well. So in one word, sharing.
Hi, good evening. My name is Tony Andreu. I am the scientific director of EATRIS. EATRIS is the European Infrastructure for Translational Medicine. We belong to the program of research infrastructures. This is an initiative that was created by the European Commission a few years ago, and it's owned by the member states, by which the different member states decide to cooperate, identifying research capacities that are located across Europe and creating an organization that facilitates the synchronization, the cooperation, exchange of ideas, exchange of initiatives, good practices among the different research facilities, with the idea of creating a huge distributed landscape of research facilities. In our case, in the field of translational medicine, understanding the concept of translational medicine as the process by which the knowledge that is generated by science is translated into practical products that take care of the health of the citizens, drugs, medical devices, epidemiological interventions, and so on. So I would like to say, before defining my own idea of open science, as I think it's fascinating how during the day we have been kind of approaching the concept from different sides, and I could see, I could feel, and I'm sure that you all have the same feeling, some sort of organic cross-link identity between the different discussions that took place, which I think is this is fantastic news, because it means that we are really identifying the challenge and we have the capacity of discussing the solutions. I fully agree with you guys. For me, open science is kind of a reference framework where knowledge is shared, and it's shared within the entire science domain, and I fully agree with you. From my perspective, the science domain is represented by all the stakeholders that participate in the value chain. That means academia, means the industry, means the policymakers, and means the public as well. And this process, this framework, facilitates the full integration of science into the society. I think open science, from my perspective, is based on three pillars, and I fully agree with the concepts that have been presented before: transparency. And I think the concept of transparency includes a concept that has been discussed before, which is integrity. Also, quality. And I like, David, a lot that you mentioned the concept of reproducibility. And I like to add to this concept also the concept of validation, because I think it's very linked to the concept of reproducibility. And finally, something that I would like to call competitive cooperation. I understand competitive cooperation by the process in which we can share a scenario where our individual agendas can coexist with the process of creating a global agenda, because at the end of the day, science wants to be a transformative instrument for the society.
Thank you very much. My name is Gaith Fariz. I am the director of the UNESCO Regional Bureau for Sciences in the Arab States. Well, why are we here as UNESCO? Simple. UNESCO, the letter S in our, shall I say, logo, we are the United Nations Specialized Agency that has been tasked to promote and advance sciences all over the world for the best of humanity. We have a responsibility for advocating and advancing sciences, as I said, for all sectors and for all groups and for all countries. So this is one. Secondly, as we all know, the SDGs has been labeled, the 17 goals that have been endorsed by the whole world, has been labeled par excellence as an agenda of science. We can see that it has put lots of weight on science advancement, be it in finding solutions for pressing socioeconomic issues or for evidence-based solutions, as well as a tool to promote equality and equity from among the various groups. Another, shall I say, basic concept from which our intervention steps is the human rights to science. This is Article 27 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights basically states that everyone has the right to freely participate in the cultural life of the community, to enjoy the arts, and to share the scientific advancement and its benefits. So this is another basic pillar, shall I say, that we are adhering to. And last but not least, definitely we believe that our normative power, our convening power, can definitely help the international community. Actually, it's our mandate, so we can all together address the issue of advancing sciences for the best of humankind. So now coming to the second question, or second basic theory, what is our idea of open science? There has been several definitions, I do agree with the concepts of sharing, of engagement. However, I would like, just from our perspective, it's about open access, that's for sure. Open access to, be it to knowledge, especially when it comes from for the various fields of knowledge. It's also about linking science with the society. So it is not an isolated thing. It's science that is responsive to the societal needs that also all the time evolve. And it has to be a dynamic process, because our needs as societies do evolve with time and change. Last but not least, definitely we believe that open science in all its concepts and practices, including access to data, information, etc., is a major tool about reducing inequalities among various sectors in a particular society, as well as among various countries, particularly between the developing and developed countries. So this is our basic vision about that. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Haida Hackman. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the International Science Council. I think within the ISC, it's fair to say that we would understand open science as an emerging paradigm for the role and the practice of science in a contemporary context, a context of ever-growing demands for science to contribute actionable knowledge and innovative solutions to the big challenges of the day, as exemplified by the Sustainable Development Goals, and to do so in ways that are inclusive, collaborative, and engaged. I think, as we've heard, it's really become an umbrella concept and this is where this, you know, totally fit in with our definition as well, an umbrella concept that on the one hand speaks to the imperative of open access and open data, which is also, it's not for me just about sharing, but it's also about including a diversity of scientific voices, methods, perspectives. So it's about the integration and facilitating through open access and through open data. It's facilitating the integration of knowledge that we say we need for complex problems to address complexity in today's world. But that's science talking to science. And so that other element of open to society, and I think here's where the definition of our conceptions perhaps remain rather vague as to what we mean by open to society. We do hear a lot of reference to citizen science, but I would say we need to push ourselves a little bit there and understand that citizen science is still about citizens who are not scientists contributing data. For us, open science in the open to society sense means that we begin to work together with decision makers, with citizens, as knowledge partners in networks of mutual learning and problem solving around co-producing, co-creating actionable knowledge. Finally, to say that for the ISC, what is critical here is to understand that the tools of the digital revolution, big data, linked data, machine learning, etc., is really, despite its challenges, but it is facilitating and driving the open science movement in ways that we need to explore. Thank you, Tolu.
Great, that's a really rich way to kick things off that we'll definitely come back to. We've heard transparency, we've heard a lot of sharing, we've heard culture change, we've heard diversity of perspectives connecting to society, we've heard about quality and reproducibility. So I'm just seeding some words into your mind, because we will hopefully have some time in the end to get some thoughts from the audience. But for now, we'll continue with that short clip of a video. As if by magic.
As a researcher, you're spending hours, months, or even years locked away in search of the meaning of life. Who knows what you're really doing? Are you getting the credit you deserve? And is the world getting enough out of you? Let's talk about this. Let's open up. Open Science is making your research results available for anyone interested. It's not only about making your publications available and reusable via open access, but also making your research data open by following the FAIR principles: findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. Open Science as well refers to being transparent about your process and methods. The goal of Open Science is to allow others to use and reuse your results. This can be done before, during, or after the research process. This way you can, from the very beginning, make your research visible and valuable for others. Researchers, the professional community, companies and society can benefit from it. By giving others the opportunity to respond to your results and using their feedback, you also have the chance to create a more authoritative work. What is there to open in open science? Open access, open data, open metrics and impact, open source, open repositories, open lab journals and notebooks, to name but a few. Interested? Here are four words starting with R to think about when engaging in open science. Reliable. It is important to evaluate the research in two ways. First, with respect to scientific principles and criteria, like validity. Second, with respect to criteria out of the professional context. This will help ensure that your results are more reliable. Reproducible. Transparency is critical when doing research. Open science allows you to clearly show what you've done to get the results you have. By being open about your methods, processes, and decision-making during your research, someone else doing the research again should get the same results. Reusable. This is the same R we mentioned when we talked about FAIR. By making your research results reusable, you allow others to build upon the solid foundation your research has already created in a given subject. Relevant. Research quality describes the measurable influence of academic research on the academic community. Research impact includes environmental, cultural, and societal impact, economic returns, and societal benefits. So follow the four R's of open science. Let your research be reliable, reproducible, reusable, and relevant. But I bet you're thinking, there's no way I can do this alone. Relax, there's help. You can contact the library, the often available institutional research support team, a corporate copyright information point, or a research data management office. There are also national initiatives that can support you or the team with the tricky questions. The NIE HBO, the LCRDM, and SURF are all there to help. These are all Dutch initiatives, but other countries have equivalent organizations that are willing to help you. Let's recap. Follow the FAIR principles. Be transparent, stay with the four R's, engage others, and ask for help when you need it. That way, we can all benefit from the research you are doing, behind closed doors, in your lab coat, with your goggles on. Open science. Just science done right.
Thank you. So that at least... So good, we play it twice. So that at least gives us a setting. I think we actually built on those points that were raised and actually mentioned a couple of additional points already in the initial introductions. So we're going to kick off by first, as I mentioned, speaking about open science policy strategies. I'm going to start with you, Kostas. You mentioned about some of your work with the European Commission. Could you share with us some of the lessons that have been learned along the way from those investments, and particularly the challenges that have been identified and some of the next steps that you were thinking to address those?
Yeah, thank you. Just to say that I liked that what it said in the video, that open science is science done right. And so open science, basically, it is good science. I say this because sometimes people take this approach, open science, from an ideological almost point of view. And it's not our approach at all. We think that open science is more efficient science. It's more creative science, largely because of the crowdsourcing of ideas and the crowd-solving of problems. Also, and very much because of the ability to work across disciplines, of the interoperability of data and the big data aspect of it that comes into the fore. So it's more creative, it's more efficient, but especially it's more trusted. And the last element that several speakers several of the panelists brought out is extremely important in this period that this was said also in the inauguration, in the first session this morning, that part of the science establishment and scientists there is part of the population of society that they are not trusted or considered part of the elites and so on, it is extremely important to re-establish the trust between science and society, to make still science something that society or people dream about, and openness in the science enterprise and transparency can help to that. It's not a theory. I mean, this is what we do. This is what the lessons we have learned. So now we are designing the next Horizon Europe program. And we try to engage with society, I bring it just as an example, in several different ways. So in creating the program, in establishing the priorities, so consulting with citizens in establishing the priorities, also not at the very general level, but also at the lower level, at the project level, or at the mission level. Some of you may know that part of the program will be dedicated to a number of missions. We start with five. For example, cancer is one mission, another one is climate change, and so on. So we try to co-create with citizens the program that will be addressing each of these missions. And then involving, I mean, in classical citizen science, citizens also in the conduct of science and within research projects. But it goes the other way also, trying to have scientists more open towards society. This is where transparency and integrity come into play. I think that the notion of integrity will be broadened as we go on. But also science communication is very important. So the willingness of scientists, researchers to go out and explain to society what they do. The other lesson that we have learned is that progress can be very fast, provided that you tackle the problem holistically in all its aspects. And this open science problem has, I think, three or four main aspects. One is relies a lot on proper funder action. So funders who put a large part of the rules for the conduct of science need to put the right policies forward, need to walk the talk, if you want. Secondly, it relies on the existence of proper support infrastructures, because everything we're talking about, from publication, open data, and so on, and the work of costs, for example, is a good example of trying to develop the infrastructure. So you need to develop the right infrastructure, and this should be an infrastructure for all scientists. And you need to change the whole system. So if you do everything else, but you don't change, for example, the incentive and reward systems, and for everybody's career, the only thing that matters is how many publications and what type of high-impact journals, well, as sharing is not rewarded, then progress will be very slow, we won't get anywhere. And fourth aspect of this, that if we want holistic progress, is international cooperation. This is very nicely reflected in this conference. Of course, all these infrastructure systems and so on, we are talking about the global science system, so this system cannot stop at any country's borders or in any region's borders. So we need to work together, and to have been doing it already, to develop a global system.
Thank you. I think that was really, really good to kick us off. So we've heard creative, which is a new framing in there, which we'll come back to. But if I ask you, Gaith, next, so we've heard creative, efficient, trusted, co-created, and need for integrity. Could you maybe share some of the key UNESCO open science initiatives and perhaps how they speak to some of these important aspects of open science?
Well, thank you very much. Actually, as I mentioned before, we as UNESCO, as a specialized agency, we do have a role and a responsibility as well, actually, in advancing this agenda, or the agenda of the open science. So within this context, and this actually goes within our mandate, and we have been working on the various, shall I say, manifestations of that since from open access, etc., throughout the 70 years of our existence. We are basically our, according to the UNESCO strategy of open access to scientific information and research, which was approved by the General Conference in 2011 and then re-endorsed with some modifications in 2017, there are a set of guidelines that the member states actually tasked us to do. We have the global Access to Scientific Research Initiative, Global Access Portal. We also established, within that sense, we have broad cooperation with universities, NGOs, civil society organizations, publishers, research institutions in that. Recently, we have established a network for institutionalization of open access. It's called the Network for Open Access for Scientific Information and Research, NOASIR, which currently rolled as the Open Scholarship Initiative. So within this perspective, I can say our activities are quite numerous. We also are very active at the policy level, helping countries establish policies for open access. We also provide capacity building programs to the various governments, member states in that regard. And most importantly, we play the role of standard setting for some of the curricula, and of course we are very active at the level of awareness to the public in public awareness programs to engage the various stakeholders in that. Right now, while we are sitting right now here in Paris, you know we have the General Conference going on. And in the General Conference right now, the discussion is going on the UNESCO recommendation of open science. This recommendation, which we hope will be endorsed by the member states towards end of this week, towards end of the General Conference this week, will actually set the rules and set the agreed upon, steps forward for advancing the open science agenda. The importance of that this we are engaging the various countries in that. We have over 190 something countries engaged, and to get a kind of a consensus on the basic approaches from all member countries on such a crucial issue is quite important if we are really serious about advancing this agenda at the global level and at the regional, sub-regional levels. So the recommendations we hope will define the open science and point to concrete measures. It will not only be a general statement. We are trying to shoot for concrete measures, concrete actions that are agreeable by all, that are endorsed by all, to ensure the buy-in and hence the active engagement of all in implementing these recommendations. This is, of course, again, I would say this is our part of our role. We strongly believe that this role will enhance the overall global agenda of the SDGs, of the achieving the 17 goals that have been agreed upon. And we are quite hopeful and confident that our member states will endorse that, and hence all of us as international community can work jointly and together towards achieving this established goal.
Thank you. That's really encouraging to hear about. So at a global, the global coordination of how member states are being rallied to take the necessary action and next steps. So staying global, Haider, can you tell us a little bit about ISC's connection with open science? Obviously, ISC is a year ago, merging of the science and social sciences, and maybe reflecting a little bit on the importance of that of that merger in addressing this open science, and also reflecting a little bit more on your regional chapters or your regional aspects of ISE's work and how these initiatives are being taken up at a regional level.
Thanks, Tolu. So I'm not going to talk too much about the merger. It feels like it's old news by now. It's 18 months, actually. As I said, I mean, I think the issue around openness of open data, open access, the notion of sharing has to be founded on the understanding of this is about integration, right? It fosters the integration. It's part of making a reality of bringing the natural and social sciences together. Beyond that, I mean, the way in which open science has now been defined by us in the video and how we discuss it, this kind of all-inclusive, quite broad concept really challenges and changes the practice of science. And if you add to that, as I was saying, the dimension of how we now utilize the tools of the digital revolution and how we factor into our understanding of open science, the role of, or the future of data-intensive science, of living in a world of data-intensive science, then the concern for a global organization like the ISE is that we see countries and regions rapidly adapting to that new reality, to the challenges of open science in a world of data-intensive science. And not to do so, for countries not to do so, brings risks of stagnation, of scientific stagnation, of being left behind. A nice quote from a strategy document talks about this, and I just want to read this to you. It says, a country that fails to develop its own capacities in open science and data-intensive science will inevitably become dependent upon skills bought in from elsewhere as a passive and ill-informed consumer of expensive data services and knowledge, lacking the creativity to thrive in a fast-changing, data-intensive world of science. So how familiar is this to us? Our concern is that what we might be witnessing is the emergence of a new global knowledge divide. And so this is the adaptation of science systems to this new reality is a systemic challenge. It's from the policy level, that's why we so welcome the UNESCO development, because it goes from policy to the awareness and the attitudes and the behaviors of individual scientists, their skills and capacities. It's a systems challenge. If you look at the open science, open data indicators for Africa, a recent report, for example, this is just one example, that of the 63 research data repositories that do exist in Africa, only one has been assigned the Core Trust Seal, which is the seal of the World Data System, for example. So, you know, I don't need to mention other factors that show you that once again, the development is so rapid that this divide is a real threat. So what we have done as ISE, working with our Committee on Data for Science and Technology and working with our partners, our members and partners in Africa, is to think about how could countries in Africa collaborate to ensure that they are adapting to this new reality. And we've set up what is called an African Open Science Platform, which was funded in the initial pilot phase by the South African Department of Science and Innovation. And its vision is for us to ensure that African scientists are at the cutting edge of open data-intensive science as a fundamental resource for a modern society. So what is an open science platform? It's simply a space where you convene not only the ideas, but the interests and the resources that exist on the continent. Bring them together to collaborate, right? So it's an open platform. There's a lot more I can say. The activities of the platform, the strategy is very concrete. It is on the one hand about convening and coordinating partners on the continent to take forward, on the one hand, what we call enabling activities. This is where the focus falls on providing and managing, for example, access to computational hardware, software tools, experience-based advice on data management, open policies and practices. And on the other hand, the application activities. So setting up data-intensive research programs on priorities for Africa, be that from smart cities to precision agriculture, and also fostering the understanding, awareness, and engagement of these open science systems with the engagement with public and private sectors, building capacities in data analytics and AI. So it's a federated system where partners are, it's open, you don't have to sign up for membership, there's no membership fee. It really is about convening and coordinating what is available on the continent, existing expertise, existing capacities, resources, plus existing ideas. What I'm happy to report to you is that the pilot phase has been completed, and we are now, together with partners in Africa, moving towards launching of the operational phase in March next year. In the process, what has happened is that the model and the thinking behind the African Open Science Platform has given rise to analogous initiatives in other regions of the world. In our ISE's office, Regional Office for Asia and the Pacific, is working with partners in the region to look at the African Open Science Platform as an example to do something similar in Asia. And in Latin America, the initiative has been taken by IAI. So I'm really looking forward to Marcos talking more about that. But suffice it to say, our interest now as a global science council is to look at the possibility, therefore, of really creating strong south-south networks between those emerging platforms and ensuring that they are connected and inspiring also what's happening elsewhere in the world, as, for example, the within the European Commission's work.
Thanks, Aidan. I think that was really useful to get both a global perspective, but also a different regional, because we've so far heard global and European. So good to get a perspective from the African continent to see what initiatives are going in there. So staying on the regional theme, Marcos, it'd be great to hear from you in terms of open science in Latin America. Perhaps picking up on some of the comments that Haider's made, what are the experienced, both perceptions and realities that you face that are unique to the region, and what are some of the initiatives and strategies being taken to address those in Latin America?
Think if I drone on and on, just cut me off. I tend to get.
Sorry?
If I drone on and on, just cut me
Undoubtedly
off.
Undoubtedly, I will. Yes.
You'd be good to think of transdisciplinary research at the moment, because I'll approach Latin America in a slightly different manner. It'd be good if we had some social scientists and people from the literatures in the audience, because Latin America shares a number of very unique characteristics as a region that are not shared elsewhere. For instance, people in the humanities have a very strong and significant footprint in the political process. Think of Pablo Neruda, Mario Vargas Llosa, Octavio Paz, José Sarney, who was a president of Brazil, was a poet. The Sandinista junta had three poets in it, and so on and so on. It's very different in the types of political process. We also are a very peaceful region. And this might sound counterintuitive when you read the news, but in the last century, It's never suffered the trauma that many other regions have suffered. We never had cities firebombed, for example. You could probably live your full life in Latin America as opposed to many other regions in the last century. And our colonization also shares a number of similarities. We're Iberian in nature, Spanish and Portuguese for the most part, some exceptions, of course, same religion, relatively the same types of economies based on human exploitation, but yet I can go to any Latin American country and immediately center myself and understand the context that that country functions in. And I can't do that in other regions. It's very difficult for me to go to Africa, even a Lusophone country, and immediately understand how Mozambique or Angola or East Timor in Asia would work. And this has created a number of collaborative mechanisms in Latin America that perhaps don't function as well as the European Union, but they function. There's my organization, for example, 19 governments, state governments. There's the Amazon Cooperation Treaty Organization of 8 governments in the Amazon. There's the Organization of American States, which still exists. It's one of the oldest international organizations in the world. There are financial mechanisms like the Inter-American Development Bank. And this, in turn, has created research and education that, again, are very similar. While primary education is dismal, you don't want to send your child to a primary public school in Latin America, the universities aren't too bad. They're very good, actually. The University of São Paulo, UNAM in Mexico, University of Santiago, and so on, have some world-class researchers and some very good research. The similarities in this is that most of the universities in Latin America are public, and most research is public. And this, in turn, has created a certain receptivity to open access and open data, meaning that it's understood that this is a public good and people should be able to have access to it. Right? It's a very different cultural, historical context from other regions. Now, this doesn't mean to say that it's, you know, an open access, open data paradise. There are certain elements that impede full open access and open science. For instance, there's a certain mistrust of foreign governments coming in and stealing our resources, for example, which I do have some sensitivity for, but this again impedes a full sharing of the information that it has. Now, this, again, in turn, has created a number of legal instruments that try to promote open data and open access. I can mention my own treaty, and I'll just read one article from it, if you excuse me saying this verbatim. Disagreement establishing the II, hold on a second. The II Directorate is to continue working in collaboration with its Scientific Advisory Committee on the design and implementation of transdisciplinary research on aspects of global change. And it's also based on the principles of scientific excellence, international cooperation, and open exchange of scientific information relevant to global change. Again, legal instruments that place, excuse the oxymoron, voluntary obligations on state governments to open this data up to populations. And national governments have followed. You see open depositories in Argentina, the one in Brazil is pending, Mexico, Peru. But what's missing is a certain coordination mechanism to give coherence, to allow for a common regional vision that can have its voice in international fora. In that sense, I believe that this has led then to a funding and an acceptance of transdisciplinary research in the region, which is reflected again through the agreement which established my organization, that research has to have stakeholder involvement. All our research has to have open data and open access, and it has to be between a minimum of 3 research institutions in 3 countries that, again, have local community or those most affected by the research participation. Again, a very unique cultural and historical context. It's evolving into something that we should keep our eye on and support. There are elements that prevent the full open and full access, but these are, I hope, being dealt with. And I think we have a lot to learn from other regions, but we also have a lot to offer other regions. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcus. I think that was really interesting to get that context from the region, and as a side, interesting that despite the connections and the connectivity in terms of cultural similarities, that there is, that lacks that kind of coordinated approach, whereas the region, you talk about in the African context, that is a lot more heterogeneous, there is this new beginnings of a coordinated approach. So it's interesting to reflect on that. So that's given us a bit of a tour through the different, a wide range of different policy strategies, from global to regional, so European, African, Latin American. We haven't had an Asian perspective, so I will ask of it as we move on to the second phase in thinking about making open science a reality, that if the two, so if Antonio or David, if you have reflections on the Asian context, to share that, because I think it's important that we have all regions represented, otherwise we'll come back to it. So maybe if I move on to Antonio next. So from ETRIS, you talked about, in your introduction, about the importance of research infrastructure being an important component of open science. Perhaps you can share a little bit more about what you mean by that, because that's not something that has come up explicitly in this policy strategies, and how focusing on research infrastructure could foster open science.
Well, I think from a strategic point of view, to provide infrastructure support for the development of science, there are, let's say, two strategies. Was the creation of large infrastructures, which is, for instance, the position that was taken when the member states decided to create the Hadron Collider. But another strategy was to use what is already existing and then trying to create a framework for harmonization, sharing, creating kind of a sense of common identity. And this is the concept of a research infrastructure. So I think that at this moment, particularly in Europe, we are in a little bit in the middle of a critical situation that we need to find a way to move forward. Because from the European perspective, we have grown enormously from a scientific point of view, but the price we have to pay is fragmentation. We have created an extremely rich system, but it's tremendously fragmented. And it's absolutely necessary that we defragment this system. Actually, I don't like to use the word fragmentation, because if you use fragmentation, which is the word that we usually is in our conversation, it means that we come from a single origin that was not originally fragmented, and this never happened. Mariana Mazzucato, who's one of the thinkers behind this concept that that Costas mentioned, the mission that is going to be one of the very relevant elements in the development of the next framework program in Europe, put on the table this concept, which is, I think, what we have in Europe of granulation. What we have here is a rich landscape of isolated granules of knowledge that are clearly identified with a clear identity, but they are unable to compose an homogeneous canvas. And I think that we have in front of us a big challenge. I like to mention this old saying that says that if you want to go fast, you do it alone. But if you want to go far, you do it together. And I think this going far is, we have this fart in front of us, which is the Sustainable Development Goals. If we want to really use science for changing the society and having a healthier, a happier, and a society where the principles of being fair in the classical concept of fair, are already accepted and adopted, we really need to defragment or degranulate this space, establishing a bridging mechanism by which the different silos that have been created are able to contribute creating global solutions. And this is open science about. Open science has an extremely interesting added value, that this process of fragmentation, it does not occur only within the science domain. It's open to the entire society, because the public and the society is part of this word that has been mentioned a couple of times, co-creation process. In the medical field, which is the field that I represent, it became very obvious a few years ago that this process that we call translational medicine, by which science generates knowledge that it's transformed into solutions for the patient community, it's not efficient if we don't have on board the patients, because at the end of the day, they have to embrace and they have to adopt these solutions. The efficiency by which these solutions are adopted is completely different if the public and the patient population, in this case, has been part of the co-creation process at the very beginning. In that sense, the society is not the ultimate giver of what we produce. Are part of us. We don't work for the society. We should work with the society, which is a completely different concept. In this scenario of fragmentation, rich fragmentation, of course, we have to be very, very critical with ourselves. We have to identify the challenge to move forward in this process of degranulating or defragmenting what we have. And one of the issues, it has been mentioned a couple of times, is reproducibility and quality. During the last 20 years, for several reasons that have been mentioned during the day, and one of the reasons is, and I like to emphasize this pressure to publish that comes from the funders, it comes from the funders, that the scientific community suddenly has twisted the original concept of the meaning of publishing for a scientist, which is to share our knowledge with the community, has been shifted to a goal in itself. And publishing shouldn't be our goal. It's just the means for moving forward. So the funding bodies should help us to change this kind of perverse culture that we have created. And a way to do that is to implement actions to reassure that the science that we produce can move forward in the value chain. And in that sense, reproducibility, validation of the knowledge that is generated is essential, that is fostered by the funding bodies. For a scientific team, for a scientific institution, it's impossible to get funding for validation experiments or for reproducibility experiments, because it is not, most of the time, is not considered a priority by the funders, by the public policies, and this has to change. I think I'm very excited about what is going to happen in Europe in the next framework program, Horizon Europe, because with this concept of the missions, this concept puts on the table a problem-solving approach, using science for solving specific problems of the community. In the case of the health domain, the mission that has been decided is going to be, as Costa says, on cancer. So we will have to create an entire pathway to make sure that we are going to tackle the cancer challenge in the society, which means that we will have to create specific processes to make sure that the knowledge that's generated has the highest quality to move one step forward in the value chain and can be taken over by other stakeholders progressing in this process of finding the solution. And we must create spaces where the different stakeholders that participate in this value chain, industry, policymakers, science, the media, the society itself, they can discuss and they can generate a common framework for moving forward in this process.
Great. Great to see to hear some tangible steps that we can take to making this a reality and with a focus on research infrastructure. You mentioned already some of the misaligned incentives around science and the science system, perversion of the notion of publishing. I wondered, David, maybe if you can pick up on this and touch a little bit more on incentivizing researchers globally to follow some of these open science principles, recognizing those limitations and those issues within the science system that these researchers are working within.
Right, yeah. The unfortunate status quo is that there's a very strong incentive to seek out and report only the most incredible or only the most surprising results. And when you do that, that comes at the expense of the credible results. And that directly incentivizes when you focus on the most surprising results, it directly incentivizes questionable research practices, which largely fall under two different types of headings, biased practices or opaque practices. So that can include things like selective reporting or outcome switching of studies. And when you've got your eye on the prize of a surprising result, combined with biases that every scientist, everybody in this room shares, very strong hindsight bias, very strong motivated reasoning, one will find the results that one wants to find in order to reap those rewards of getting published, getting funded, and getting hired as a scientist. So our mission is to address those specific practices and the incentives that lead to them, that reward them, and to flip the system on its head, to go back to science, the root of science. You know, in the 17th century, the Royal Society declared that their motto was nullus in verba. You know, don't take anyone's word for it. Show me the evidence. So these concepts of open science and reproducibility, of showing me what the results are, showing me what your methods were, not just the results, are fundamental to how science was expected to proceed. But the system we've created, incentivizing those incredible results, lead to irreproducible research. 50% of research findings, 50% of research dollars cannot be replicated by independent laboratories. There are three reasons that can happen. There are boring reasons for irreproducible research, there are bad reasons for irreproducible research, and there are good reasons for irreproducible work. The boring reasons are just you don't quite know what the original researcher did. And you can only find that out by trying to replicate those previously published studies. Well, it turns out I don't quite know their precise experimental design, or I don't quite know the methodology, or the precise statistical test that was used to test this hypothesis. That only comes to light when somebody else tries to do it. And that type of problem is solved through open materials, open analytical code, and open data. So that gives you transparency into what happened to produce the result. The boring reason, I'm sorry, those were the boring reasons. If you can address those, good. The bad reasons for reproducible research are biased processes. So those questionable research practices of selective reporting, the presentation of hypotheses that were actually generated based on looking through the data, misuses how hypothesis testing should be independent of hypothesis generation. And so if you split those processes up, you can have a robust process of exploration and a separate, distinct process generating new data for testing that specific hypothesis. And pre-registration is one method for making that wall between those two modes of research, creating a question and testing the question. And then there are good reasons for irreproducible research. Those are new discoveries. Well, it turned out there was some hidden moderator, there was some hidden variable, the ecosystem changed. New knowledge is being generated because we did it again and the results turned out differently. If you can eliminate the boring and bad reasons for irreproducible research, you can rest assured that your different result is generating new knowledge. But if you can't eliminate those boring and bad reasons for irreproducible research, we're left in a quandary. We don't know, of the 50% of research that's irreproducible, what do we do with that? So the solution to these is, as I said, reward and recognize the values of the practices that the scientific community universally espouses. Transparency of methods, don't take evidence based on reputation, but you know, based on the evaluation of the evidence itself. Transparency doesn't guarantee credibility and doesn't guarantee rigor, but it allows the evaluation into that methodology in a way that is impossible without transparency. So things like outcome switching are the only way, we know that those are pervasive in different fields. The only reason we know that it can happen is if there's transparency into the process. So clinical trial registration is a good example where there is an audit trail to see what was proposed and what was reported in the medical journal. And you can understand the source of the problem thanks to that level of transparency. Transparency also directly incentivizes rigor. If somebody else might be looking at this, that's a very clear reason for having good data hygiene, for example. And so the recommendations come down to what we call the top principles, promoting openness and transparency. So that's into open data, open materials, and open code. Recognize when that happens, make it clear for the reader that open data underlie these results that are auditable by peers or others. Separate those different modes of research of exploration and confirmation with a process of pre-registration applicable for all hypothesis testing research, not just clinical work. Publishing formats that focus on the importance of the methods and the importance of the research, the importance of the research questions and the rigor of the methods, known as registered reports, where the proposed research is submitted to the journal that evaluates the publishability of the result, of the eventual result before the results are known. And then simply a lot of these questions about how reproducible research is are empirical questions that we can answer if we incentivize and fund and publish more replication studies. Those or validation studies, which are deemed currently to be too boring to fund, too boring to publish, too boring to get professional credit for, but are foundational to how we go about assessing whether or not scientific claims are credible and rigorous. There are specific recommendations that all the major stakeholders in the scientific ecosystem can follow to remake a system in line with principles that have been around for hundreds of years.
Again, fantastic. Thank you for those very concrete measures that we can start to take. I think we've had a really nice exposé of starting with the policy strategies that are in place or being developed and concrete initiatives to make open science a reality. I'm going to go back to the panelists to speak, to reflect on making this a reality for future researchers globally. I'm going to give each of you a perspective to share, and because I need you to be succinct in your response, I'm going to give those to you, and then I'm going to go to the audience to ask specifically about two perspectives that we haven't had in the panel. One is around from an Asian perspective, so open science initiatives and policy strategies, and the second is from the publishing space. So to reflect on some, because we've talked about some of the pressures in terms of getting your papers accepted. So I would like to hear from, I'm hopeful that there is someone who can speak to both those two terms, those two aspects briefly. But before I do so, I'll give each panelist the point to speak to. So starting with Haider, just in no particular order than what I've written down. In thinking about making open science a reality, the issue of knowledge production and fairness and equity in knowledge production is a critical one. What are the concrete ways, either with the example you've given with the Africa Open Science Platform or other initiatives, what do you think is required to concretely address that knowledge production aspect of things? Antonio, we talked about being more responsive to society. And I think that came up in your initial intervention. In terms of outputs, we've spoken specifically about academic outputs. I'd like you to share your thoughts on other media of communication, particularly the role of outputs that are more outward facing to society, and the role of that nature of output in achieving open science, particularly in respect to connecting to society. Gaith, we talked about the human rights of science. So as a counter to Haider's point on knowledge production, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the right to benefit from science. So one aspect of open science we've talked about is what we put out there. But surely, if we take a human rights approach to science, we have to take a human rights approach to who benefits from what science produces. So your reflections on the right to benefit from science and that role and in open science. Marcos, you talked about, you brought up a new term, power. I think in all of this, it's all well and good having data and science, outputs of science openly available, but in a sense that assumes a level playing field. How do we address the realities of the different power dynamics that are in play? So you talked about some of the trust in terms of engaging with other researchers or funders outside of the region. So I think it'd be important that we reflect on the power dynamics in play in the science landscape and the potential, how to confront that in order to achieve open science equitably. Who have I missed out? Costas, we talked about publishing. Again, the publishing pressure, it's come up a couple of times, the role of funders and the importance of that. I spoke at a session yesterday morning about, and I mentioned that I am trying to found a slow science movement. And I got two panelists on with me, so I've got membership of three at the moment. Can you speak to the role of funders? Because we talked about co-create, need to co-create, we talked about the publishing pressure, but the reality is these things take time. So on one hand, we say we need to co-create and form these partnerships. On the other hand, there is some funding pressure to just push forwards with that. Could you speak to that and also the role of the reviewers of funding applications, because again, often we see funding mechanisms that mean well, but they still fall short because we have the same reviewers using the same criteria, and these ideas not coming forward. So can you speak to your role as funder? And lastly, David, you've spoken about these new, the need to create these questions and also test these questions. You've given us a new spin on the good, the bad, and the boring. Can you speak a little bit about training? And so in the context of future scientists, how much are we, so if we say, oh, you need to focus on this kind of science that is collaborative, that's all well and good when you're established, right? Selling an early career, oh no, don't worry about the publishing pressures, focus on, that is just simply not a reality. So how can you speak a little bit to the training of the future generation of young scientists and how that is what role that can play in achieving those? So I'm going to give you a little bit of time to reflect on it because I am going to ask for succinct responses to that. But first, is there anyone who is involved in open science initiatives or can reflect on open science initiatives in the Asian context that would like to share some reflections either on your perspectives from the region, as Marcos did, or on concrete initiatives and strategies that are ongoing? Thank you. If you can just introduce yourself, please, beforehand.
I'm Maslan Othman. I'm from the IEC Regional Office for Asia and the Pacific, based in Kuala Lumpur. We are in the process of trying to see whether we can establish a platform for the Asian Pacific region. My main worry there is there's a big discrepancy between the capabilities and the capacities of the countries in the region. We're talking about China, we're talking about South Korea, India, and on the other hand, you have Timor-Leste, Myanmar, Laos, and in between there'll be countries like Malaysia that has very good development in science, but don't have any idea on how to do an open science platform. So we are in the stage of finding out what are people's desires. I think there's a lot of desires. But trying to think how we're going to find a common platform that will be of interest and advantage to everyone. And I think that would be a big problem moving ahead. We had thought about the possibility of breaking the region further into smaller sub-regions like ASEAN or Central Asia or even the Pacific Islands, but that is something we will continue to explore. But what I, through some of my discussions at a meeting in Beijing recently, I realized that actually in the end, what you need is a global platform, and maybe a regional platform will have some use, but in the end, the scientists in Indonesia, they want to be they want to have access to scientists in Europe or the US, and that maybe a regional platform may not be as effective.
Okay.
And the other perspective I got was there are instead of getting a global platform that deals with every data, that maybe we should be looking at specific areas like, say, disaster management or others. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I think that was really helpful. And particularly, I wonder if Haider and Marcus, you could reflect on that in your comment, because I'm sure it's similar challenges in the African context in terms of varying capacity, capacities of research and the power dynamic again. Okay, do we have particularly journal? I just need somebody who represents a journal or publishing perspective. That's what we're opening the floor to. Okay.
Thank you, and thank you for raising that, because yes, it would be very nice to be on the panel and be able to share that we do, of course, support completely open science.
Sorry, can I just ask you to introduce yourself?
Sorry, Stefan Bergmans, I'm from Elsevier, but I also represent the trade association, STM, on the Open Science Policy Platform from the European Commission. And if I go back to take a framework to what Kostas was saying earlier, when it comes to the infrastructure, we're definitely actually well beyond the publishing, looking also at the data and the analytics, definitely helping develop an open infrastructure. When it comes to the reward system, there too, we're not the ones who are going to be deciding which indicators, which metrics need to be used. But if you want to have open science implemented, you will need to have new other metrics going well beyond the impact factor or even the just the citations. And that too, we're exploring. And then of course, again, when it comes to the policies, there are many of the policies that we also can help implement. That's where I think the policies we're putting in place around open data are gonna be important, so that when people come to us, be it to publish, or even earlier, because it was mentioned also how the whole research workflow needed to be open. I think some of the solutions we're proposing, such as electronic lab notebooks, for example, are going to be the ones, again, helping through the infrastructure and making sure also that is super important, and it was mentioned by some of the panelists, that the burden should not be on the researchers. Open science should not bring more work, actually, for the researchers, be it on their daily work or administrative work. So that's what I think some of the players, like my organization, are looking to do, is to help implement open science and make it as easy as possible for the researcher.
Great, thank you for that. So I think those provide some important points.
And I forgot to say, just to be clear on open access, most of the publishers, including of course Elsevier, offer open access gold, green, and other versions in all of our journals. Just want to make that clear.
Okay, thank you. So I think particularly David and Kostas, if you could reflect on some of that in your feedback. So I'm going to give 2 minutes each on those points that I raised, starting with you. Sorry, you're closest to me. So a couple of minutes each.
Might keep it to one. So many issues, I mean, that have been raised. And your question is difficult about how do we concretely address issues of fairness and equity in processes of knowledge production. So it's always tempting to begin by asking for more funding, right? But I think having listened to the conversation today, and at a high level of granularity or of abstraction, I should say, I would say we need to go to from funding to framing. We need to think, radically rethink the values and the attitudes and therefore behaviors of science systems. And for me, the mission here for science globally is that if we're going to have open science, if we're going to have knowledge production processes that are inclusive, fair, equitable, we need to understand that we are our vision is of science as a global public good, but the reality is that we have policies for science and therefore practices, funding practices, incentives practices that actually foster, continue to foster competition at the national level. And so that shift in how to ensure that our policies and the values that they represent for science globally, that we shift our thinking towards policies for science as a global public good would be my mission. Thanks, Tolu.
Well, thank you. Coming to the question you raised to me about the right to use science versus, as a human right, I would actually expand the question not only to the right to use science, the right to generate and produce knowledge and science, the right to transfer and localize knowledge and science, and the right of deploying science. So in this process is cannot happen in cases of closed science. In the case of monopoly of science, and here comes the concept, philosophically speaking, of open science and versus the monopoly of science that we are witnessing in many parts of the world. So from pure human rights point of view, definitely we are, I strongly support the idea of having this the right to produce science, because in many cases, this right is ignored. And it is being faced with various, obstacles, including legal, intellectual property rights, copyrights, etc., and so on, and the publishing, which I thought we were trying to talk about. One thing that we say in Arabic, that there is no use of science that is not useful for the people. So if we really want la khayra fi ilmin la naf'a min in Arabic, which is no use of science that is not useful to people. So if we really want to translate this into action, we do have to have this approach, rights approach and the open access. And another thing that we have always been trying to advance, at least definitely in the Arab world, and I trust in the whole all parts of the world about, and we advanced that in the Arab Knowledge Report, which I had the honor of participating in, the triad of knowledge and science, and development, and freedoms. So science should be linked to developmental issues. This cannot be achieved without a free atmosphere, freedom of expression, of freedom, and freedom of research, and open access to all. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Well, I have to say something in this, when we talk about science and society, I think we need to change the language, because science is part of the society. I think we should talk about science and public. But for the sake of simplicity, let's put it in this way, science and society. It's an issue of language here. And this happens within the science field, even within the science field. I mean, scientific domains that speak one particular language do not speak the same language that other scientific domains speak, even in situations in which cross-collaboration is obvious. So this element, this gap, gets bigger when you bring it to the public. And here the media, they have a very, very important role because they basically translate the language of science into the language of the public, and somehow the other way around, because they bring the language of the public and the expectations of the public to the science community. So we definitely need to find a way to develop the concept of open science, and in particular to use open science for a lever for developing our societal fabric. We need to be able to create a common language. And if we go this way, we have, as scientists, an enormous responsibility, because it is our responsibility to elaborate this language and bring it to the public.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up.
Yeah, without the co-creation and without the engagement of the public, science will never become a full transformative element of the society. Because in our societal structure, this is the best tool that we have, because we all speak the same language.
Yep.
We are not submitted, or we are, but we are not too much influenced by political elements or by economical elements. We have the same goal.
Great.
And we have the opportunity of putting science as a proof of concept that we really can create a global development of our society.
Great, thank you.
I read recently a survey that the European University Association did of a few hundred universities in Europe on what counts most for an academic's career. Number one was publications. Yeah. Number two was bringing money into the university, bringing grants. Open science practices, sharing, and so on, was number 10 in the list. Of course, this is an average. Some universities have different policies than other universities. But it shows the magnitude of the work that's ahead of us. So you asked what is the role of the funders. We intervene at many different levels, as you said yourself. The level of the rules, in order to get funding, you sign a contract, so you have to abide by a certain number of rules, at the level of the evaluation proposals, and at the level of the follow-up and review of projects. At the level of the rules, we had already in the past in Horizon 2020 rules related to open access. We are quite happy with the rapid progress there. We have about 80 to 90%, more than 85% compliance. In other words, more than 85% of the publications we produce out of EU money are already open access today. We will go further in the next framework program. For example, one major change that we'll do that relates directly to the publishing business, although many publishers have anticipated, it is the change in the copyright rules. In other words, so the authors will not be allowed to give copyright to the publisher, to the extent that the publication, the underlying research, has been carried out through EU money. So I cannot expand now to all the rules because there are many of them. At the level of the proposals, will be this is now being discussed. So what I give you is a bit my personal idea, because we'll be making the rules for evaluation proposals over the coming months. But I think we'll be evaluating for each proposal data management plans, and we'll be seeing to what extent in the methodology of the project the fairness of the data is taken into account for, to what extent will be the data open, if not open, are there good reasons for not being open, and so on. Right. We'll be looking at the, we could be looking at the CVs of researchers, for example, not only at the number of publications. I mean, the president of the ERC is here actually, and the ERC already for many years now asks for up to 5 publications, if I remember correctly, in the last 10 years. So which are what you consider your most important 5 publications? You have 50, doesn't matter. It is the 5 that matter. But also we'll be asking for CV, we could be asking for good examples where the person shared, had engaged with society, as we were talking about earlier, and so on. Also, involvement of citizens. mm-hmm. in the project proposal, have other opportunities for engaging with citizens and citizen science that have not been exploited. Right. Because we'll mainstream citizen science across all the program. It won't have a separate ghetto for citizen science as in the past, but we'll mainstream it wherever is reasonable and logical, of course, not by definition everywhere.
Okay.
And then finally, at the level of the follow-up of the projects, I'm not going to say anything about this.
Okay, thank you. So we run out of time, so I really need you to be succinct. Thank you.
I'll just give the bullet points for the survey you mentioned about the number one, number two criteria are getting published and getting funded. Number 10, and it would be lower if there were more options, is our open science activities, emphasizes the importance of making publishing and funding decisions based on these ideals. In terms of some of the training questions you asked, there are a lot of communities of practice around the world organizing around open science activities. One example is reproducibility, journal clubs that early career researchers are really forming communities of like-minded values around. Early career researchers can future-proof their skills and their CV by sharing the citable data sets, citable analytical code, pointing to preprints are a more credible way to point to something rather than submitted to some journal. Flipping the script of transparency as a perceived risk versus transparency as something that increasingly funders are looking out for, and one can set themselves out from a pack at this point in time, and that won't always be true. And so emphasizing those points on various applications is currently a major positive way to set yourself out. Responding to some of the publisher issues with impact factor, I won't go into the whole history of that, but it's obviously a bad measure of how credible an individual research finding is. One reason that it persists is that it's an immediate indicator of the supposed quality of a research finding. And so that immediacy can be co-opted with these open science practices. Give me the transparency factor with how reproducible or how openly available the various research data, methods, materials are within a process. That gives the same immediate and a more credible way to evaluate research outputs. And publishers are good partners in implementing a lot of these, but there's a lot of inertia, a lot of barriers to doing so, but they're responsive to customers and to a lesser degree readers, editors, authors, and reviewers, and so pressure through those avenues is a method to implement activities such as open data and methods transparency via registered reports and transparency.
Right, thank you. Finally, you've got the most complex issue of power to let us know how to solve that in a minute or so.
Yes, in 2 minutes, the toughest question of all, because we can approach power in several levels. We can approach power as a region and the power they bring to international fora of their perspective regarding open science. The region also has issues related to indigenous peoples and their rights to their traditional knowledge, and that is an extremely sensitive issue precisely for open science and open access. We can speak of power between the countries of the region. Some countries have different perspectives on open access and not, and the power they bring. I'd like to speak, however, at power at the national level in the population of the countries, because you were speaking of the most inequitable continent in the world, right? And the disparities of income are huge. And when we speak of the scientific community, we're speaking of the elite, because it has only been very recently that disadvantaged groups have been able to access universities. So their equitable participation in scientific projects is has been extremely difficult, although we do give lip service to open science and open data, because most of them are more concerned about keeping their jobs as opposed to participating a project regarding their genetic resources or whatever. The region, however, at the national level, is cognizant of this, and there's a number of programs to be able to allow indigenous communities and allow local communities to participate in it. But I think the codification of this awareness has been made through an agreement that has just been ratified by the countries of the region called the Regional Agreement, and I'll read this very slowly, on access to information, public participation in justice in environmental matters in Latin America and in the Caribbean, which was negotiated under the Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean of the United Nations. And it touches on all the aspects that we've discussed regarding open science and open data, and also the whole issues of power that you mentioned, that these disadvantaged communities are unable to participate equitably in scientific projects.
Thank you. That was a remarkable task and remarkable effort. I think for each of your responses, I wanted to follow up with at least three or four other questions for each and every one of you. And I'm really sorry. I'm sure you feel the same. We didn't get a chance to get any more inputs from you. But I think you will agree that we've had a really fantastic and insightful thoughts on the current landscape of open science in terms of strategies, but also really concrete explorations of the challenges, the core challenges that should ground us and inform our actions, but also some of those initiatives at the national, at the regional, and at the global levels to try to address those challenges. I'd encourage you, I think some of the panelists will still be around, so I know there were some hands up, so please encourage you to try and tackle them on their way out. But please join me in thanking the panelists for their thoughts and experiences. Yeah. Thank you.